And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. He is Paul DiTino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. But right off the top, we're continuing to break down the 2017 Giants draft class. And right now we're joined by the radio play-by-play announcer for Cal Football. That is Joe Starkey to talk a little bit more on the Giants' new quarterback, Davis Webb. Joe, Lance Meadow, Paul DiTino with you here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's good. Always good in the off season. Hoping for better days ahead with the 49ers and the Cal Bears.
Understandable. Well, Joe, let's start with Davis Webb. You saw him up close and personal for his lone season at Cal. What jumped out to you about his performance this past season?
He came across as fearless. He was really tough. He was willing to take a hit. What I like most about him is not only does he have, I think, big league skills, I think that he's one of those players that will always be the first one in the office in the morning, the last one to go at night. He was an amazing senior player because he had no history at Cal. He played 1 year. He came in as a fifth-year senior, the new rules that you're allowed to do that, and so he didn't know a lot about him, but he came from a similar offense also. What was a very important factor is that he came over from Texas Tech where they also ran the kind of modern version of the run and shoot where it's just bombs away all the time, but he was incredibly involved in the room where you watch the film, leading the team, fearless. The only games he had that were really poor all year is he got injured a couple of times, and so it cut his productivity in that way. But overall, I think he has a chance to be very good.
Joe, let me ask you this, because from everything we've heard, he really loves to work the films, and as you just said, first guy in, last guy out, so that will parallel Eli Manning very well, and he certainly has a very strong arm, and we know Eli used to like to throw the deep ball until they changed the offense just a little bit here. What are a couple of things that you think Davis Webb is going to have to polish up as he develops in this Giants system? I mean, heck, you've seen some great ones out there, whether it was Aaron Rodgers, whether it was, Goff. You've seen some real good ones enter this league.
Yeah, I think that the main thing is he's got the same adjustment that Goff has had to deal with in Los Angeles, and that's going with a more normal NFL-type offense than what he's seen in college. It was the Dykes offense was the hurry up and throw the ball offense. They didn't even have a tight end in the offense, and so there was never a huddle. Everything was done in about 15 seconds, and I think that there's going to be an adjustment for him at the NFL level to get used to that. But I think because he's got the basic skills, he's got the size. He's, I think, 6'5", about 230. He's smart. He works hard. He's got the basics. Now, is he Jared Goff? I think he's a cut below Goff. Goff, to me, I remember telling Jared one day after watching a practice, I said, I called every Joe Montana game in my career with the 49ers, but I said, you're the first guy since then who, when you go through a practice, the ball only hits the ground because somebody dropped it. And I don't think that this guy is quite there yet. I think that he will be a little less accurate, but I do think the potential is really good.
What about his demeanor on the field, Joe, when things do go wrong, things are breaking down around him, maybe he fumbles, maybe he throws an interception. How does he keep things glued together? We always talk about Eli being even keel. Does Davis have those kind of characteristics?
Yes, absolutely. At least from what I've seen from his 1 year watching him in college, I think he definitely has that kind of poise and can deal with it. There are only a very few times the entire season that I thought he got rattled because he'd thrown an interception that he knew he shouldn't have thrown and made a decision that he probably shouldn't have made. But overall, I think that as he matures, I think even the little things that he did wrong will disappear.
Joe, you mentioned that his production had dipped later on in the season when he was dealing with some injuries, and I'm sure you're familiar. I mean, one of the reasons why Patrick Mahomes took over for him at Texas Tech was because he dealt with some injuries. He's not going to have to be thrown right into the fire here with the Giants because Eli Manning is obviously still the starting quarterback, but how much of a concern is perhaps durability? You said that he doesn't shy away from taking hits, but, I mean, is durability perhaps a concern moving forward to you?
No, I really don't think so. I think that sometimes things happen even to no matter how healthy you are or how you play the game, and you can get those kind of injuries, but I don't think he's injury prone. I think he works out hard in the weight room. Physically, he strikes me as a very strong young man. I just don't think that that's going to be an issue in the big picture.
We've heard so much about how his dad is a football guy. In fact, a quarterback's coach, if I'm not mistaken. And so he's kind of been weaned on football from the very get-go. Could you give us more insight into his personality in terms of his football mentality? And have you met his dad? What's his dad like? Could you see the influence really written all over Davis's face?
No, I can't. I can't say that. I literally never met his dad.
Okay.
Maybe it's because he was only here for the 1 year, and we just didn't get a chance to know each other or see each other. So I can't give you much on that. I can only go by the reaction from the coach. I know that there's no doubt that Dykes thought he was a terrific young man. His teammates were absolutely, totally supportive of him. He became an instant team leader, even though he's with him for only a year. I think the intangibles are there for him to have a great career.
Talking with Cal play-by-play football announcer Joe Starkey about Davis Webb, the Giants' latest draft pick, who will play the quarterback position behind Eli Manning. And I think what was interesting, and Joe, you alluded to this, and I know you only saw him at Cal, but you know, he wound up losing his job at Texas Tech. And I think for most college kids, you know, that's a tough spot to be put in when you're the starter and now all of a sudden reality sets in, you're the backup, you have to watch somebody else flourish. Then he finally got an opportunity as a graduate transfer. I mean, what do you think that says about his personality and his ability to deal with adversity perhaps at the next level?
Well, I think that's a real strong point, is that he didn't let it ruin his career. He didn't get down on himself. He just simply seemed to work harder, if that was even possible, because he was giving so much as the 1 year we saw him as it was in so many different aspects of getting ready to play football. So psychologically, it looks like it didn't damage him. I think he's in the perfect place, by the way. I thought, I remember telling Aaron Rodgers when he left Cal and went to the Packers, I said, this is the best thing ever happened to you, even though it broke my heart that you're not a 49er, because you're going to be behind Brett Favre for 3 or 4 years, and that's going to make your career. It's going to set you up. And I think in many ways, this sets Davis Webb up to be behind Manning, because he'll have a couple of years to just see how it develops and learn the system and learn what you do and what you shouldn't do.
Joe, all of us who have researched Davis Webb have looked at the video. We've seen what he can do on the field. We've also heard all the draft gurus and the draft nicks talk about him. Is there something you can tell us about him, either as a player or a person, that isn't out there amongst all the generic talk about what this guy is? Is there something interesting that we could sink our teeth into that you know because you've been around him so much?
Yeah, but he's a reserved guy. He is not, for example, Rodgers was more of an open personality, certainly, and Goff was kind of a low-key, California, laid-back type of kid. I thought this Webb holds it a little bit closer to the belt. You know, even when you talk to him in a very relaxed atmosphere and all that, there was always something. He just didn't want to give away too much of himself, at least in the meetings that I had him and my partner, Mike Polowski, would have with him. He would tell us anything we wanted to know, and he was all that. But he was a little bit more of a low-key personality.
That's not a bad thing.
Not at all, especially since he's going to have to learn now from Eli Manning behind closed doors and so forth. Well, Joe, we know you got to run. We greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for hopping on the program here with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Glad to be with you guys. Take care.
You got it. Cal play-by-play football announcer Joe Starkey here on Giants.com.
And let me make one thing clear for those of you on the East Coast who don't know. Joe Starkey is a legend out in the Bay Area. Between Cal Bears football and 49ers football, you heard him mention Joe Montana before. This guy has called, I mean, I don't want to put a number on it, but just let's say he is an encyclopedia of football play-by-play. I mean, he has done so many games with so many superstars, Hall of Famers and otherwise, in big spots, not in big spots. I'm thrilled to be able to get him on there because I think his perspective on this player is probably going to be more accurate than others, since he has such a great frame of reference to use when describing what the kid is.
Well, the Aaron Rodgers comparison, not to the style of play, but what I mean by that is, and he brought this up, the fact that Rodgers wound up going to a team that had a veteran, polished quarterback. He was not thrown into the fire immediately where he had to start. The expectations were high. He was able to observe for a few seasons.
For 3 years.
Correct, before he then took over Brett Favre. So I think that is interesting to see whether or not Davis Webb could benefit from the same type of setup. What happens down the road is hard to tell. I mean, remember, Ryan Nassib was here for a few seasons, and perhaps there was talk about, you know, he would be groomed, and, you know, he's now a free agent, and he's moving on. But we'll see what happens with Davis Webb. I mean, the fact that he can sit back, observe, digest the system, learn from Eli Manning. I think that's beneficial for any young quarterback, no matter who you're talking about.
Here's the one thing that's going to be a little bit touchy, if you will, from the second he gets here. All the media is going to be all over him like a microscope.
Of course.
Because they're already saying, well, he's the future quarterback of the Giants. And every throw he makes at practice is going to be on Twitter. Okay? I mean, he throws a 20-yard completion, Twitter's going to be 20-yard completion to Brandon Marshall. Within seconds, incompleted pass to Beckham on and out. It's going to be all over the place. I mean, you might as well just hashtag, Davis Webb right now, because it's going to be there. The media folks are not going to leave this kid alone. That's the unfortunate part about it, because we're talking about how he's going to have probably 2 or 3 or who knows if it's even 4 years to learn and to be groomed. No, not really, because I think when Aaron Rodgers got to Green Bay, he was truly in the background. He was allowed to learn in the background. I don't think the New York media is going to allow Davis Webb to learn in the background. They're going to put him on the forefront, on the back page from the second he gets here, and there might even be every single day during training camp Davis Webb updates on their blogs, because they are going to attach themselves to this quarterback from the get-go. I really believe that.
Well, I do think there's a difference in terms of the media coverage in Green Bay versus New York, but on the flip
side,
it's
pretty intense there, too. Of course, it's smaller.
The Packers are the big thing in town. They don't have a lot of other distractions.
These people
and a lot of teams
eat cheese 24/7 in Green Bay.
But here's the thing. Having that exposure right when you're a rookie in New York is not a bad thing, because then if you are fortunate enough to eventually assume the starting job, you already understand the scrutiny.
And that's the positive. The negative is every single step he takes as a rookie, including missteps, are going to be exaggerated and uncovered.
Well, the only missteps that you could possibly go into is whatever he gets in preseason. That's it.
And No. Every single practice, but the media is going to be all over him. Oh, he was 2 of 8 today in practice, taking a 2-minute drill. They're going to be all over him.
But that's the difference between the media consumption and then separating what there is substance behind. And what I mean by that is the fans and people who see those reports, you take it for what it's worth. You absorb whatever you can get out of it, and you move on. No, and I wasn't saying that you weren't on that page. But
you know what the people in the room are going to do.
That's because we live in a world now where consumption is important, and you got to put out constant info. Seeing his completion percentage in practice is not going to tell you anything
about
his long-term viability.
But the writers will make it mean something.
No doubt. But that's why it's up to the fans to determine
exactly
what they want to put importance on. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Well, let's open up the phone lines. You want to talk about Davis Webb. You want to talk about the rest of the rookie class. Everything is up for grabs here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go overseas. Jay is in England to get us started. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hi.
Hello, Jay. So, what do you got for us?
There's a lot of fans that's not happy with the Davis Webb pick. So I don't want to be that guy. I want to just objective standpoint. So we're not expecting him to come in and take over right away. We're not even expecting him to do that in 2 years. In the third round, knowing the Giants' needs, and I don't know the board, I don't know what they value and what, you know, who was hired and who. Based on what we need and what was there, like a Perine or Kamara, I think he was there, or Connor. Was the value of somebody that's going to sit for 2 to 3 years worth it more than a player that's going to play in a win now for 2 to 3 years program?
I'm going to make your question kind of open-ended. If the Giants sign LeGarrette Blount and get that 230-pound thumper who has experience in the NFL and has won in the NFL, and he is here in 2017, will you feel differently?
I would.
That's why I think your question, while valid, I also believe it's a wait-and-see answer, because I still think there are other parts to this puzzle that need to be completed. And if it's week one of the regular season and they're heading down to Dallas with a 53-man roster that has a hole at thumper, then you and I can sit here and say, boy, they might have done better with a thumper. But until that right. happens, I think we have to just kind of sit back and wait till the answer comes to us.
Okay. And second question. So I did some tape review, and I used to be that guy. I used to watch a lot of tape, and I would make my own draft board, and then Giants would let me down by picking different players, and I'll get upset. So I stopped doing that. So I waited until after the draft,
okay.
and I watched the video of Davis Webb, and a lot of bubble screens, a lot of exotic screens to the wide receivers in that Cal offense. I think the best tape I've seen of him so far was the one where he played. It was Texas Tech versus Stanford. I think that was it Stanford? I can't remember, but that was his best tape that I've seen so far. I've seen them overthrow a lot of players, underthrow a lot of players. Accuracy past 10 to 20 yards is not great. Always out of shotgun. Footwork's not that awesome.
Well, I'll tell you what.
When I
watched this film, the knocks that I had, footwork, he needs work on footwork, but you can teach that. Remember, he operated exclusively out of the shotgun in college.
Yeah.
You can work with that. You can teach that even at this age. You can do it, and then you're absolutely right. I thought as part of that, footwork does kind of go inside with accuracy, because once your footwork is squared away and you got that, now you can throw the ball accurately. And so I believe that you're absolutely right. You've hit on two blemishes in his game. That's why he was not a first-round pick and why he lasted mm-hmm. into the second day. But those things are certainly coachable.
Okay. All right, well, I'm hoping for the best. Go Giants.
All right, okay. Jay, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in here on the program. If you look at the draft, Kamara, by the way, was off the board by the time that the Giants took Webb. So
and he's
no
not a thumper, by
him.
The way, either.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's going to the Saints. He's perhaps somebody that down the road I think could very well be a thumper, depending on, you know, how Adrian Peterson and Mark Ingram's contracts play out. They may look at him in that role down the road, but he was off the board. And P. Ryan, he went after Webb. He wound up going to the Redskins. But, you know, once again, they wound up getting a running back in Wayne Gallman. We'll see how the carries are divvied up. I don't think that even if you took a running back in the third round that there was a guarantee that that was going to be your lead back anyway, since Ben McAdoo in the latest radio interview indicated that Paul Perkins right now
right.
is in line to be the starter, which is what I've been saying all along anyway.
The thumper is a role in this offense. He is not the lead guy. But if you wanted P. Ryan in the third round, then you probably would have settled for, given the way it worked out, you probably would have settled for Peterman in the fourth round if you wanted to go quarterback.
Who wound up going to the Buffalo Bills.
Right. That's probably so. So are you better off with P. Ryan and Peterman or Davis Webb and Gallman and maybe that veteran coming in from the street?
Or even a Joshua Dobbs, who went to the Steelers. I believe it was the fourth
Joshua
round.
Joshua Dobbs would not have been a good pick for the Giants. Well, not a good fit.
I mean, listen, you could say the same thing that people have to work on with Dobbs. It's similar to what they have to work on with some of these other younger quarterbacks, too.
Totally different style of quarterback. They wanted a pocket passer, a pro-style guy.
And I get that.
Davis Webb and Peterman were the two best guys for them.
No, listen, I said that Peterman.
And we both discussed this
Dobbs,
for weeks.
Yeah, no, Peterman and Dobbs.
I was not on Dobbs, though.
Well,
I was not on Dobbs.
I mean, I was a little bit different. I thought that Dobbs was good value.
I think he's a good kid. I enjoyed him on
value.
The Gruden show.
But remember, I'm looking at it more for value, too. If you get to the fourth round, the Dobbs is still there. I think from a value perspective, it makes sense.
Not if he doesn't fit your system.
Well,
if it's apples and oranges, you don't want him.
He went to the Steelers. So,
yeah,
you know,
I know.
Pittsburgh is not running
I know.
One of those.
No,
out-of-the-box
I didn't
systems.
Think that was a great pick for them, okay. to be honest.
Well, I mean, they're looking for, you know, somebody to take over for Big Ben. They had Landry Jones. They'll see whether or not that works out. I don't think they've been too happy with the results, so that's why they're taking a chance on a young quarterback, such as the Bills as well. I mean, with Tyrod Taylor and some of the question marks he has. But the bottom line is, if you don't have to have the quarterback step in day one, you have the benefit to work with them
that
and
is
develop
true.
Them.
That
no
is
matter
true.
What system they
that
come
is
from.
True.
That's the goal. See, if you were in a situation where you had to have Davis Webb or Joshua Dobbs step in day one, you know, then I think the conversation changes, because the room for them to develop and change their style that quickly is limited. But when you have 2 to 3 years to toy with these quarterbacks, I think that takes the pressure off of the coaching staff as well as the player, and then perhaps you'll be able to yield some positive results down the road. But we're not going to be able to tell what's going to happen until, you know, we see what happens 2 to 3 years down the road. You know, it's all speculation at this point, whether or not it was a wise choice and they're going to be able to get the benefits, because, I mean, it's right now the goal is Eli Manning's going to be on the field for the short term and the immediate future. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Giants fans are necessarily going to complain about that. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got AJ in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi.
I'm liking like the Giants are carrying like three or four backs since they got Davis Love.
In terms of three quarterbacks, you're saying whether or not they're going to keep three on the roster? Is that what you're alluding to?
Yeah.
Well, I think that right now you would think that they would keep three. You've got Josh Johnson, you've got Geno Smith, you've got Davis Webb, and you have Eli. Last year they kept three, too. There were some years they only kept two. But I think based on what they did last year and the fact that you just drafted a rookie, you probably want another veteran behind Eli Manning just for protection, especially if the rookie's not ready to come in. I would think that there's a very good chance, as it appears right now, that they would probably keep three quarterbacks. And the battle is probably, Paul, between Josh Johnson and Geno Smith to see who's going to be the immediate backup, I would say.
And they'll need to figure out where Geno Smith stands medically because he's still coming off of that knee procedure.
Yeah.
And, you know, the quicker he gets healthy, the better off he's going to be in that competition because you can't fight for a job in the trainer's room.
Anything else, AJ?
One more thing. I know Mouse, can you play like deep tackle, like Robert Ayers or then?
You're talking about can Avery Moss serve as like a Robert Ayers type of player where they move him inside and outside?
You know,
I appreciate the phone call, AJ.
Thank you.
Thanks,
sir. You
got it.
I see him as just a pass rusher.
So do I. Yeah. I mean, I think that
Spags, off the edge.
I think Spags will experiment. Which he's done
to give him a look because, after
linemen.
All, he loves to mix and match.
Indeed.
And give these guys a look to see if they can do it.
Yeah.
I suspect he's going to be an edge guy, though.
I would, too. I would think that that's where they're going to start him off. Now, the reason why I say experiment is, you know, Kerry Wynn's been moved to the inside
mm-hmm.
since he came over from Richmond.
They've all had a shot.
Yeah, they've
the
all.
Inside.
So that's why, even though on paper and how they were used at college in Youngstown State, to use Avery Moss as an example, doesn't mean that Spags won't try to see, hey, how can we get maybe four edge rushers on the field at once? Somebody's going to have to move to the inside. So I think that that could very well come to fruition during practice. But right now, I think his spot to start will be off the edge.
Yeah.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We got David in North Carolina. David, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well.
Hi.
What do you got?
Hey, just wanted to call and, you know, I appreciate some of the points you guys have made over the past couple of days, kind of recapping the draft. And I just, you know, and I hate to critique it because, you know, Lord knows I'm not an NFL general manager. But, I mean, what
Neither
else do we,
we
have to do? Look what time of year it is, right? So we might as well have some fun talking about it.
I know. And you know what? I was just telling somebody outside here in the facility, I can't wait. I wish training camp was starting tomorrow. I really do. The heck with the summer. Let's just rip off the calendar now, start training camp tomorrow, get these guys on the field, because I'm tired of talking about guys who are in the air, guys who are in paper and in computers. No, I want bodies on the field. That's what I want. I need bodies on the field. Let me sink my teeth into some real
yes.
football. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I hear you, brother. When I look at this draft, you know, I don't have as much of a problem, you know, with the Giants' philosophy of, you know, best player available, picking some guys. But to me, yeah, and especially in the first couple rounds, I think if you don't pick the best player available, you risk maybe losing out on a All-Pro caliber player, Pro Bowl type player, heaven forbid, a Hall of Fame player. But when I look how much defensive depth and talent was in this draft, it just really hurts me to see that. And even though our problems seem to lie on the offensive side of the ball going into the offseason, it just hurts me to see that only two defensive guys were taken. I mean, I would have loved to have had another corner, and I'm not going to go back, or I haven't yet, and looked and seen, you know, okay, well, and they could have took this guy instead of taking this guy. But I'm just saying overall, I would have rather than continue to build up that side of the ball because it's not like we have set a trend yet, even though, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love our personnel. You know, if this was a 2 or 3 year run where this was a dominant Giants defense, then maybe we could be in a comfort zone. But, you know, it's kind of like the offense. We had a couple good years of the offense improving, but then it took a step back. you know, I would have liked to continue to build up the depth on this defense, because nothing against Trevin Wade, but you see what kind of a drop-off it is when somebody like DRC comes off the field. And,
yeah.
And I know you pointed it out the other day. I mean, I would have liked to got some more linebacking depth. I would have liked some more, you know, I know we got Moss at defensive end, but I would have enjoyed another defensive lineman, honestly, or corner. And then the last point I'll make, and I'll take it off there and get your guys' input, circle back to the first-round pick, who I necessarily don't have a problem with, but kind of get your take on this. I mean, isn't there only so many footballs to go around? And don't you see defenses still kind of playing us the same way where, okay, we're going to pick which one of these guys we want you to get the ball out quick to, because we don't believe you can hold up on the offensive line and get it downfield. I still see us, and I know that's part of the West Coast, getting it out quick, but I still worry with this offensive line, and even with the addition of Ellison, are we going to be able to take advantage of the deep ball? Or, you know, besides Beckham breaking a slant open for 80 yards, that's
yeah.
not supposed to happen. You know, to me, we had playmakers last year, and you can even debate the effectiveness of Victor Cruz, especially since he hasn't called on anywhere. But to me, part of the problem of the offense is we never let routes develop. Everything was a quick dump off the tie or,
right.
or a quick slant. I'll take it off the air, get your guys' opinion. I appreciate it. Love what you do.
You'll take the defense. I'll take the offense. Okay?
Yeah, if you want to start
okay.
with the offense.
Let me take
fine.
The offense.
Absolutely.
You take the defense.
Not a problem.
Offensively, here's what I would say to you. I do think that this offensive line will be improved this year. I think the tackles are going to be better. I've been saying this for months, and now Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo are saying it as well. I do think that DJ Fluker is going to be a significant addition to this line. Think of the fact that they've added Ellison, a 260-pound blocker, who is now part of the tight end H-back fullback mix. They did not have one of those last year. So the pass protection and the run blocking is going to be better. How much? I can't tell you that, but I know it's better than what it was we saw last year, because there's another 260-pound piece of beef that's going to help them block. I mean, that by itself means they're going to be better. Now, on top of that, you add the skyscraper in Brandon Marshall, okay, who gives the Giants a totally different Plexico Burris-type dimension because he's tall with the wingspan. You can now throw the ball up there and have him get the 50-50 balls. The Giants had a bunch of receivers last year. Nobody was bigger than 6'1". That's a problem because you know what? There are a lot of defensive backs in this league now who are 6 feet,
yeah,
6'1", 6'2". It doesn't work. You got to have somebody big. So by adding the offensive line improvement, and then by adding the tall receiver in Marshall, you have now basically said, hey, you know what? We're a heck of a lot more dangerous than we were last year. The other factor you're missing here is that, and there's more than one way this is going to cap. The Giants have now decided, for the most part, it looks like, again, look at the 2011 Green Bay offense. Who were they had five receivers on that team. You know who the five were?
We went over this on Monday.
Yeah. All right. Nelson, Jones, Driver, Jennings, and Cobb. Talk about five awesome receivers. And they had JerMichael Finley as the receiving tight end.
And some of those guys that you named, by the way, were in the developmental phase. They weren't yet Jordy Nelson and Randall
but
Cobb.
But they all
point.
Caught
yeah.
passes.
Yeah.
They were all worked into the offense. So it is entirely possible to spread the ball around and make use of all of them. It can be done. The 2011 Packers did it. That's why I've been telling you guys. It finally hit me over the weekend. The Giants are looking at the 2011 Packers as the blueprint. The other thing I want to mention to you is this. How many teams in the NFL, and you just alluded to it when you talked about the Giants' defense, it's a perfect segue to Lance here. How many of them have three skilled cover guys, four skilled cover guys? I'm not going to go five, but let's just say three and four skilled cover guys. You know what? Just like Aaron Rodgers saw Trevin Wade or Cody Sensabaugh throughout the second half of the playoff game and knew, oh boy, that's where I'm throwing the ball, because I'm not throwing at Eli Apple and I'm not throwing at Janoris Jenkins. I'm going to throw it wherever Cody Sensabaugh or Trevin Wade are. Well, guess what? when Eli goes back to pass and he's got Beckham and he's got Engram and he's got Marshall, Shepard, you know what? That's four guys. That's four guys right there. How many teams in the NFL can match up with those four guys? He's immediately going to say, okay, where is the weak link or two weak links? Before I snap the ball, he already knows exactly where the Achilles of that pass coverage is, because the Giants now have so many weapons and a variety of weapons. Eli's going to know exactly where to go, just like Aaron Rodgers did.
Well, if you look at the personnel on paper right now for the Giants, that's obviously the ultimate goal. That, assuming everybody's healthy and the execution is there, which I always say is the key. Mm-hmm. We're talking paper right now. Execution's different than paper.
Well,
then you're right.
That's all we can do
correct.
Now.
No,
it's April.
So the defenses the defenses would have to be reactionary. And then wherever they focus their attention, you would assume that Eli would play the favorites and go where he sees some weaknesses. Same thing in the red zone, you know, where they've had trouble executing over the last few seasons. Let's not forget about that. The Giants, they've been able to move the football, Paul. But then when they get within that 20-yard line, the struggles of punching it in, the more targets you have, like you said, that can win those 50-50 balls, you would hope that then the red zone efficiency goes up. So I think that's also part of the rationale and part of the thinking.
Well, I mean, the other thing you could do in short yardage, down by the goal line, if you're inside the 2 or 3, how about if you throw Ellison out there at 260? Fluker, let's just say if he loses the battle for a starting job. I think he can win one,
as
but if he loses one,
he's
the sixth offensive lineman. So you go double tight ends, Fluker and Ellison. Okay, folks, that's over 600 pounds of beef to slam it up in there inside the 2 or inside the 3-yard line. That's a lot different than what the Giants had last year.
Correct. You have different options, a bigger package on the goal line and so forth. Now, with respect to the defense, I don't disagree with the last caller's sentiments that when your defense is your strength, the goal should be to then continue to build up the depth chart, protect yourself from players leaving in free agency, injuries such as DRC. And if they walked away with a corner in this draft, I think it would have been a very wise move.
We all thought that going in.
Absolutely. I mean, we were talking about that. Remember, we had the mock draft. And John and I were saying, if you got the tight ends and the corners there, I would not be surprised, nor would I argue, if the Giants wound up taking the best
without
corner
a question.
On the board. Because
without
you got
a
fourth reliable option. If some of these guys are dealing with injuries, hey, you're protected. And that's key, especially because, see, we're talking about the Giants throwing out four different weapons between their three wide receivers and their tight end. Well, other teams are doing that, by the way, too. There are plenty of other teams that have three wide receivers and a playmaking tight end. Case in point, Tampa Bay, you were talking about the size that the Giants are presenting, Paul, and Tampa Bay is a team the Giants are going to see. Tampa Bay is putting together Mike Evans, Cameron Brate, O.J. Howard. The last two guys I named are tall tight ends that they're looking. And to just change it up, they got DeSean Jackson, plus Doug Martin. So all of these teams are trying to stack the talent pool so therefore they can stress out the opposing defenses. But getting back to the point about defense – here's, though, where I will counter-argue. If you look at the draft and you say in the third round the Giants took Davis Webb, and then you're looking through the list and you're saying, well, this corner was out there, that corner was out there. Without knowing, Paul, where the Giants ranked these players and how high they were on, you can't make the argument, well, they should have went in that direction, because it goes back to your evaluations and your board. If those corners who you look at on paper and you're high on, doesn't mean that the Giants were high on them. So therefore, they weren't going to pass up on the value of Davis Webb at that point to reach for a corner who was not very high on their list. Without knowledge of knowing what the board looked, it's hard to say that a bad decision was made. You'd have to see what the board looks like for those other defensive linemen and those other corners, if we're just going to focus on defense, where they ranked in conjunction with what Davis Webb was on the board. Without knowing that, it's very difficult to say that, well, they should have went in a different direction.
The only thing you can do is estimate based on what you believe the consensus value was based on the draft experts, so to speak.
But remember,
and that's the best
differ,
you can do.
But teams differ from where those experts stand. That's why I'm throwing that out.
So I'm with Lance on this one, but I will say, you know, for example, to look in another position, it seemed like at the spots they picked on the board, there were no offensive tackles in the neighborhood of the correct value where the Giants picked in each of the rounds until all of a sudden they get to the sixth round and they're like, well, wait a minute. There's an offensive tackle here that clearly has sixth-round value, maybe even a little bit higher. Well, let's trade the seventh-round pick, move up, and get the kid from Pitt. And that was the one time when they got around on the board, and they pretty much said this, where the tackles valued in their neighborhood. And they weren't going to push it in any other round.
Well, that's why.
And they were right.
Jerry Reese said, we wanted to help the offensive line. I'm paraphrasing a quote, but we weren't willing to reach to do it. That
Correct.
Was his main point.
And I agree with that philosophy 1,000%.
Not only do I agree with that philosophy, I agree with that philosophy at any position, Paul, I
yeah.
would say.
Oh, yes.
And that's
Absolutely.
Why, and that's what
that's
I'll,
sound football.
Well, that's why I'll throw out the question. You know, even if you look at the Evan Engram selection, and this goes back to you'd have to know what the Giants board looked like. If according to their board, Engram was like their number two tight end, and the offensive lineman that was still available were, you know, we're talking about on row two or row three at that point, mm-hmm. would you want them to have reached for an offensive lineman that they did not value just because on your eye test you think the offensive line did need more assistance? Or would you rather, from a value perspective, go after what they thought was the top playmaker at that respective
well,
position?
And it's not even,
that's something you have to weigh.
It's not even just the guy's pure value. It's also how they value him in a given system and how he's going to be used. Here's why I'm going to give you this statement, because while I may have preferred Njoku and I may have preferred O.J. Howard, who of course went before the Giants.
So he was off the board.
Okay,
board, yeah.
here's what you can say. Universally accepted, Evan Engram was the best receiving video game tight end on the board. Njoku, a little bit more physical, projects to be maybe a little bit more of an inline guy than Engram does. And certainly O.J. Howard, much more all-around, old-fashioned, old-school kind of tight end. But if you just wanted to go for the video game tight end, the guy who was the best receiving tight end on the board, you know what? Engram was that number one guy, and that was consensus across the board from here to California. Everybody said, if you really want to focus on his receiving skills, he's the best guy. So now understanding in retrospect after the draft exactly philosophically how the Giants are building their offense, how they're scheming their offense, and how they're using what I seem to believe is the 2011 Packers blueprint, I understand why Engram, is the best fit for that blueprint. Even I have to admit that. I'm an old school guy. I loved O.J. Howard. I really loved Njoku. Ingram's a better fit for that blueprint than those other two are.
Which is setting up the philosophy that we always talk about leading up to the draft, and you and I even talked about this a little bit earlier in the week, drafting players that fit into your system.
GM and coach have to be on the same page.
Or the opposite, which is you then draft a player who is just great value, but then you try to make that player fit into mm-hmm. your system as opposed to going for the player that already meets the criteria that you need to thrive in your system.
I'll give
Those
you a stat.
Are the two things you always have to
In 2011, in Ben McAdoo's last year as tight ends coach with the Green Bay Packers, and JerMichael Finley is one of his all-time favorite players. He has professed admiration for him throughout his career as that's one of his guys. JerMichael Finley that year played inline tight end on only 7% of the snaps. Okay? 7% of the snaps. And he was the starting tight end on the team.
Yeah, they use their tight end as an additional wide
okay.
receiver.
That's why I'm telling you, Evan Engram is going to be this Giant team's JerMichael Finley.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. Mike is in Boston. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to jump on to what, you know, everyone's been talking about with regards to some of the draft picks, just kind of throw my little take out there for what it's worth. You know, I wasn't big on Engram at first. I was bigger on Njoku. I'm happy with the pick. I see where he fits. I listened to what was said on Monday and went back to look at the 2011 Packers, and it is kind of intriguing to me. But the one thing that I will say with regards to that is I still wish that the Giants would have considered taking a tight end like Butt, who was still on the board in round four, and not passing on him for Wayne Gallman, who I think is more similar to what we already have in terms of our running back depth. Maybe a guy like Darqua, he's similar to that. I feel that the downfall of the Packers and even some of these other teams that have done very well, the Packers went 15-1. You could look at, you know, the Panthers a few years back. You could even talk about the year that we beat the Patriots when they were undefeated. You end up running into a team that has your number in the playoffs. And I feel like having that little bit of versatility, I think in the past couple of years, the Patriots have really been honing in on being versatile, even on their defense, being able to switch from a 3-4 to a 4-3 at times when they need to, depending on the team that they're coming up against. I just wish that in terms of the tight end, we didn't put all our eggs in that basket. I understand that it makes sense, and I think we'll have a great season next year. Just wish that there was a little bit more versatility in terms of that position. We did lose out on that on some of the big running backs, and I get it. We picked a quarterback. We may be thrilled about it a few years from now. But, you know, we could still pick up a guy in the free agency. I just don't feel like the Gallman pick, even a lot of the day three picks were great ones, in my opinion. I happen to love, you know, the defensive tackle that we picked up.
Tomlinson,
both personality-wise and in terms of his skill set, I think it's going to be great. I'm not bummed out about the quarterback. I think that there's a lot of sense with that, even though we did pass up on guys like Perine, who we could have got in round three. I'll take it off the air and hear what you guys have.
Well, Mike, before we let you go, just out of curiosity so that we can react accordingly, you threw out the name Jake Butt, and you talked about versatility at the tight end position. I'm just curious what you see in Butt that if he was drafted, would have given the Giants more.
Well, he's old school. He's a blocking tight end first.
But also, remember, he's also coming off a torn ACL. Let's not forget about that.
Right.
And there's no guarantee he's ready at the start of the season. You have to take that into consideration.
Well, and to be honest, we heard more and more as we got closer to the draft from folks around the league that said he would not play this season.
Well, and that's
he was
going to
be a redshirt. And you're already redshirting Davis Webb. To redshirt two players out of this draft class, I think that would have been a mistake. Then, and besides the schematic situation where Butt is an old-school tight end, I think those are the two reasons why, if you're the Giants, you could not have considered him.
Well, I completely understand those arguments. Here's where I see value in a guy like him, is that when you look at our depth chart, we have Ingram, who you could arguably say is similar to Marshall, but I understand what we're trying to do. Here's one thing that I took a step back and had to look at. After we drafted Ingram, it's interesting that our entire division drafted for their entire day two picks, they spent them on cornerbacks, with the exception of one linebacker.
Yep.
You know, we could see how they're trying to adapt. They're following the Giants. We're really kind of leading what the division is doing, and I'm sure other teams in the league are going to have to really start making adjustments to the types of offenses that are changing. And the Giants are going to be doing a very good job with that. But in terms of depth, who do we have? Will Ty. And I've always wanted to have that big tight end. We've never had that traditional. I hate it when Jason Witten somehow finds his way open in the end zone, or, you know, some of these other tight ends that, you know, the defense does a great job holding the team back. Or you think it's going to be a field goal, and all of a sudden there he is in the red zone. And come playoff time is where I'm thinking down the road, I would love to see just that additional option when you have a certain defense that you're trying to play against, just to be able to change it up. And you could still play Ingram, but maybe in certain situations have that traditional tight end and not have to fall back on a Will Ty when you could have had, you know, Jake Butt or even some of the other guys that were still on the board.
Well, Mike,
I think George Kittle's might have been.
One thing that
Kittle,
just want to throw out.
There was a few guys that you could have had later on if you really
one name,
wanted them.
There's one name on the roster right now that we tend to forget about
Adams.
Because he's been banged up. No,
Jarrell Adams.
No, I was going to throw out Matt Lacoste. You know, Matt Lacoste, to me, has an opportunity to make this roster this year. And we've thrown out his name in the past. And if you go back to college, he was actually used as a fullback in college.
Fullback, H-back, in line, and could also stand up some.
And
very versatile.
And Lacoste is 6'5", too, which is also that big. He's the same size as Red Ellison, actually, if you look at his measurements. Now, I'm not telling you that he's going to be a star in training camp. That's not why I'm bringing him up. I'm just saying he's an intriguing player just to monitor and watch, And maybe he does fulfill a role this year now that he's finally healthy. He hasn't been healthy, so they haven't been able to utilize
2 years in a row he couldn't stay on the
field.
Well,
that's the thing. That's the mystery. Listen, we were
And you guys know I was a big Matt Lacoste fan coming out of school.
And I like his characteristics. I think that he could bring something to the table. He's got to stay healthy. Listen, we talked about Will Johnson last year, too, when they brought him in. We said the same thing. He has the measurements, the versatility to make something happen. Unfortunately, he couldn't stay healthy. So I'm not throwing out Matt Lacoste to get everybody excited. I'm just saying there are other options on the roster. We tend to write them off because we haven't seen them.
Except the injury bug ruins the picnic.
Well, and that's the problem. Yeah. But now that he has been healthy. He's going to be taking part in the spring workouts. I think that's somebody just to keep close tabs on.
We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad you said that just because I've actually wondered about him. I haven't seen enough of him. To me, he's kind of a wild card, but that kind of gets my hopes up a little bit. I'm glad you mentioned that.
No problem. And, Mike, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
The Giants need to figure out is, you know, they're going to keep three quarterbacks. That's the way it looks based on what McAdoo has said. They're going to have to steal somebody from some position. And, you know, are you going to steal it from the receiver core? Are you going to steal it from the running back core? Are you going to steal it from the line? Are you going to steal it from the tight ends? I mean, can you afford to keep four tight ends if you're going to keep three quarterbacks? That's going to be hard to do.
It's a good question.
It's going to be hard to do. Because I think it's obvious that Ingram is one of them.
Yes.
Adams is another one. If you want to count Ellison as a tight end instead of a running back, because you already got...
Unless you assign him fullback.
Okay, but now if you do that, then...
Which you didn't have last year. So.
Right. So if you do that, then it's still got to come from somewhere, though. So how many tight ends are you going to keep? You know? It very easily could wind up being Lacoste, Adams will make it, Ellison's going to make it, Ingram's going to make it. Lacoste may be fighting for a spot.
Yeah, sure.
You know, with
I
Will Tye.
I see that.
It may be Lacoste against Will Tye for one tight end spot. That could easily be the competition.
I think given some of the versatility, and this is me including Ellison in the tight end conversation, I would think that as of right now, and a lot depends on health in the spring, that they would keep four tight ends. That's what I would go with right now.
I don't think it's out of the question, but it will be hard to do.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. If you like what you see out of your defense, do you maybe keep one less defensive back? And does that create...
Not in today's NFL.
I'm not arguing in favor of that.
To keep a full complement, you got to do it.
I'm just wondering if that rationale comes into play. That you feel good about, you've got, you know, maybe five corners, and then one of them could play safety,
I think they're more likely to steal one off the back end of the running backs, the wide receivers, or the defensive line. And the reason I say that is because you have Ingram, who's a pseudo-receiver, so you could steal one at the back end of the wide receiver depth chart if you wanted to. You could steal one of the linemen because you've got so much versatility with the defensive linemen. You're playing a lot of your ends in the sub-package inside anyway. Maybe you only go with three natural defensive tackles instead of four. Maybe you steal one there. Or, again, running back. You know, you probably will try to keep one on the practice squad for sure. You know, so do you just go with four running backs instead of five? It's a position that tends to get beaten up. You know, a lot of people would hesitate to do that. But could you do it? Maybe.
Well, if there's anybody that's going to go on the practice squad, if you just look at this group of running backs, a lot of them have too much veteran experience. They wouldn't even be eligible other than Goleman. And you're not putting Perkins on the practice.
No. They're not. I mean,
you're talking about maybe an undrafted free agent that maybe winds up on the practice squad. Right. I'm just looking at the current running backs.
No.
If
you sacrificed
one of them,
you're not going to do it on the current guys.
Yeah,
the current guys, it's not even
Drones got too much experience, I believe.
You know what? I wasn't even thinking about Drone. He got lost in the shuffle with me because he would be number five right now.
Correct. Exactly.
I would think.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, somebody you want to keep an eye on is the fellow from South Jersey, from Camden. We talked about him before as a possible practice squad running back. Daryl Verghese out of Virginia Lynchburg, 5'11", 217. He's the fellow who went through a tremendous amount of adversity in his early life. All kinds of things happened to him and his family. And, you know, he's on the Giants roster going in right now. To me, that's the type of guy maybe – is a good practice squad candidate.
And certainly is not going to be in danger of not being able to be eligible.
And I say that, by the way, just from looking at the logistics. I haven't seen him play at all. So, you know, let's wait till he gets on the field.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, welcome aboard. What do you got?
Hey, great to talk to you guys. A lot of speculation, but you know, I feel good about it all there. You know, sure, I'd like an extra defensive back. Sure, I'd like another tackle. But look at what we got. You know what I mean? Maybe we got the first three guys are all pros, and especially the quarterback. You look like, you know, what everybody had to come up to get quarterbacks and what they paid extra for them. So, I mean, if he comes around, you're really getting the bargain. And remember last year there, we did come up and take a cornerback when we couldn't get the offensive lineman. So, hey, and then we, like you said, we want more defensive help like you were talking the other day. We have another safety coming. And who's to say this defensive end, our fifth round pick don't come around too, or one of the free agents then, really and truly. And same with the tight ends there. I like our tight ends. Hey, maybe Adams could be a real good blocker and come around just as good as what was his name? But that last
Jake Butt out of Michigan. Yeah,
they were talking about. So I really, you know, like it. I heard yesterday, reading online, that McAdoo wanted to take our quarterback in the second round. He liked them so much. Now, this, I don't know where this came from, but I heard Reese and them said, no, that's too high for them, and they held off, and I'm glad we got him in the third round. So that could really be a steal, seriously, you know. I mean, he has nice size, a big arm, and I don't think if he can't handle playing practice and people talking about him, then he ain't going to make it in New York, but the kids can play. You know what I mean? He plays in big games, and you know what I mean? His father's in coaching and stuff like that. So I don't look for no problem there. It sounds like he has a temperament like Eli. So, that's all I wanted to weigh in on. And, we'll just have to wait and see how everybody pans out. But really and truly, it could make it real hard. And another thing is that always works out its way is injury. You know that always comes around somewhere. Somebody has to get hurt. Look at last year. We had to put the guy never even played, the fullback, on injured reserve and never played it down for the Giants.
Oh, Johnson, so, yeah.
So,
predict injuries. That's the one thing you can't do. That's why when you look at the draft is not just about guys that are going to come in and start. It's also about what your depth chart looks like. And also the draft is not just about 2017. The draft is also about anticipating what may happen in 2018, like the Giants did in the past. I mean, when they drafted players like Linval Joseph and Jonathan Hankins, unlike what happened here with Jonathan Hankins leaving, they were preparing for a year down the road because they still had their starting defensive tackle on the roster, but they knew, hey, you know what? Barry Cofield's going to be a free agent. Mm-hmm. Linval Joseph's going to be a free agent. If we could get a good quality defensive tackle in-house, we can lose the starter, and we have a guy on a rookie contract. This year is a little different. They still found a replacement, but you can't just look it in a bubble for 2017. The draft is much bigger than that.
Yeah, I said one of these free agents could come through and make it even tougher, you know. It seems like we always come up with a couple decent free agents fighting there, too.
Three made the team, Joe. Three undrafted free agents made the team last year.
Right. Now, I want to ask you, who do you think, if they cover the tight end we just drafted with like a linebacker or a safety like the chances Ty had, with his speed, I mean, if last year Ty, you know what I mean, he's a good possession receiver and has decent speed, but this kid is breakaway. Do you think they'll put somebody different on him more, or would it still be a linebacker or safety?
You're going to either do two things. If you're going to put an outside linebacker on him, he's going to jam him something fierce at the line because you're not going to let him get a free release with 4.42 speed.
Yeah.
That's just not going to happen.
Yeah,
that'd be really foolish.
The kid can go in motion and jamming him.
Okay.
That's very risky because all you need is one step there and you have him on the side of the field, and that kid
That's one way to deal with a guy like this. You're going to want to jam him a lot. The other thing is you're going to want to put either a very mobile safety on him, or you just flat out stick a corner on him. If you're so lucky to have four quality cornerbacks, and again, how many teams have them,
that's,
you might wind up putting your fourth corner on him. And by the way, how many fourth corners in this league do you think are 6'3" and a half? I don't think you can name one.
Yeah. You're lucky the teams in our division have two quarterbacks or cornerbacks, because all of them are worried about it, Paul.
The first coach to do that to Jeremy Shockey was Bill Parcells in Dallas. He decided enough of this. Teams are trying to bracket him. They're using linebackers on him. They're using safeties on him. No. Shockey is too dangerous. So when Parcells was in Dallas, he put his extra corner on him and said, that's it. We're gonna shut him down. We're sticking a corner on him to blanket him. And that's the first time I remember ever seeing a corner, you know, cover a tight end man-to-man. And since that time, you know, some teams have been forced to do that as we've become more of a video game tight end offense in the NFL.
Yeah, I just said, you know, I like it. And like I said, he if he turns out to be another weapon, you know, they'll really be scratching their heads. Who should we double, really and truly, you know, because he has a chance to be a game breaker. So that's all. I thank you. And, you know what I mean? We'll just see how everything pans out, you know. But, hey, I can't argue one bit with the draft right now, you know, truly. And like I said, it might be a lot, you know, look at what the other teams always give up, you know what I mean, to move up to get these other quarterbacks. So if we scored on the quarterback, you know, I really and truly. So, hey, thanks
right,
for
Joe.
Taking my call.
Appreciate the call. Thanks so much. Let's hear from Zach on Long Island. Zach, what's happening?
Hey, honestly, it's an honor to talk to you guys. I'm a couple days late on listening to these podcasts or Big Blue Kickoff Live, and I'm listening to Shakes from a couple of days ago and some other gentleman who was going off about how terrible we did in this draft and what were we thinking, what were we doing. I just got to tell him, shut up. What are you doing? Like, you're a Giants fan and you're saying this stuff? Like, you got to believe in what we're doing. I love every single pick. I mean, I would have liked a couple of different picks. I mean, the way I look at it, there's nobody that I don't like in the draft. There's players that I like more than others. And every player that we drafted can help this organization. So I just wanted to tell Shakes and whoever else is talking all this nonsense, just stop it. Just stop it, please. You're a Giants fan. Trust.
They're pretty rabid in their own way. So you can relax a little bit on this, okay? Because they do love the team and the franchise, and they've been long-time loyal callers.
I'm being a little hysterical.
I know you are. And you know what? To be honest with you, look, going into the draft, if I had given you my want list for every single round, and everybody pretty much knows, you know, I was thinking Njoku, I was thinking Perine, you know, these are the kinds of guys I was hoping the Giants would get. And they didn't really get any of my want list guys except for Davis Webb. Okay, but here's the thing. You can't just say going in, okay, ooh, I don't kind of like what they did because I liked my guys. After the fact, you say, well, wait a minute. Now that I've had a chance to open the book and read the book and I understand what the author meant, I get it. I see it. I understand it. And this makes perfect sense now. And that's what happens very often with the NFL draft. You don't understand really what the team was doing until afterwards, and sometimes you say,
exactly.
You know what, it still doesn't make sense. Other times you say, oh, the light just went on. Now I know why they did that. This is good.
You read my mind. You read my mind. That's
you got to,
exactly
you know, you got to be able to open the book and read the chapters sometimes to figure out what the author meant, because the cover of the book doesn't always tell you.
Well, very well put, and that's why I listen to you. That's why I respect you. You've been doing this for a long time. And you know what?
A long time.
All right, Zach. Appreciate the phone call. Looks like
Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks so much for chiming in on the conversation. Let's take a look at Twitter here, hashtag Giants Chat, as we near the end of the program. James Jones at @little_TNT32. What happened to Bennett Jackson? Bennett Jackson was released. Wasn't even on the team last year, so he's no longer
I think he's
in
out
the
of
equation.
Football. I don't
yes,
think he landed
he did
on
not
anybody's
land
roster.
With another team. That is correct. @Elo_Bajo would not want to lose Will Tye. We were talking about who you'd have to sacrifice at maybe the tight end spot in order to keep two quarterbacks. But, you know, keep in mind, and, you know, maybe Davis Webb shows them enough in training camp and they're content with having Eli and Davis Webb. I think he'd have to show a tremendous amount of strides in order for them to get to that point. So I would assume that Geno Smith and Josh Johnson are battling for the backup spot, and they are ultimately going to keep three, barring an injury here or there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's how most fans need to at least operate moving forward when you're thinking about how they're going to construct the roster. And nobody's saying they're going to lose Will Tye. It's just that right now they have a number of tight ends in the mix, and in all likelihood, somebody is going to have to
got to compete.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the whole goal was in the offseason. It was to bring in competition at various spots. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just necessarily the offensive line. Let's take a look at some other tweets coming in on a variety of different topics. Bill at Bill_Norris550 ask you, Paul, is Webb a player you did your homework on? What did you see? Saw YouTube film, like his poise, no happy feet, great arm.
Yeah, and yes, I did film work on Davis Webb, and I had projected him as a fourth rounder for the Giants. They got him in the third, and as I said before, needs work on his footwork and needs some work on his accuracy. Those were the two things that needed to be polished up and prevented him from being a first-round draft pick. But there's no question about his arm strength. Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo, I echo their feelings. He probably had the best long ball arm strength in the draft. I mean, he can certainly unload it. And you can't argue with his physical stature. At 6'5", 220, 225 pounds, you know, he's got the frame to look over a pass rush or a defensive lineman coming into the pocket. And he is basically a pocket passer who showed a tremendous amount of poise and has shown some mobility within the pocket as well. He's not a statue back there by any stretch of the imagination. He can do some things on a little bit of a rollout and shift himself around for the rush. That's why, and we talked about this too. My thinking was, if you're going to get the quarterback in the future, you could probably wait till 2018. I didn't know that they needed to do it this year, but we both discussed this, Lance. If you were going to do it this year, Webb or Peterman. I was more Webb. I think you were more Peterman.
I was more Peterman.
But
yeah.
Those were the two guys. If you were going to go project, they were the two guys you'd want to keep an eye on.
Because of the characteristics.
And pro-style offense.
And yeah, that was the key. Peterman, though, much more so than Webb.
Well, Peterman under center.
Style. Yeah.
You know, Webb, yeah. Shotgun guy. Yeah. Peterman more under center. But, again, these guys, they got, like, NFL DNA in them. You could see it, both of those quarterbacks.
Well, that is going to wrap up the program. We appreciate the calls, the tweets. We'll continue to break down the draft, get to all of your other topics and discussions throughout the course of the week as Big Blue Kickoff Live each and every weekday comes your way at noon Eastern here on Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.